coming up on this week's mini episode of the Drew Perowit Podcast.
Now, cancers are forming all the time. So right here, right now, my body and yours and everybody watching this podcast, we're forming little microscopic cancers in our body right now.
Hi, everyone. It's Drew. There's a reason I've talked to so many experts on my podcast about magnesium. This super mineral is needed for over 400 enzymatic reactions in your body. In fact, every single cell contains it and needs it to function. Magnesium is essential for stress management and restful sleep because of its influence on neurotransmitters. It supports insulin sensitivity and fights the risk of type 2 diabetes. And magnesium also reduces C-reactive protein and many other markers of inflammation, among so many other crucial functions. I personally started taking magnesium to help with my sleep, especially when I travel, which we're all starting to do again, and it's been a game changer. But I don't just take any old magnesium. I take Bio-Optimizer's Magnesium Breakthrough. It contains seven different forms of magnesium, which all have different functions in the body. I haven't found anything else like it on the market. That's why I hand it to all my friends like candy. Bio-Optimizer's is great because all their products are soy-free, gluten-free, lactose-free, non-GMO, free of chemicals and fillers, and made with all natural ingredients. Right now, Bio-Optimizers is offering my community a few special bundles. Just head over to magbreakthrough.com/Drew, spelled differently, D-H-R-U, with the code DREW10, D-H-R-U-10. So that's magbreakthrough, magbreakthrough.com/DHRU with the code DREW10. If you missed any of that, it's in the show notes. Now back to today's episode. Hi, everyone. Drew Perowit here. For hundreds of years, cancer has been portrayed as a foreign invader we've been powerless to stop. But our understanding of cancer is slowly undergoing a massive revolution, allowing for the development of more effective treatments, which also include lifestyle recommendations, strong lifestyle recommendations. For the first time ever, the death rate from cancer is showing a steady decline, but the war on cancer has hardly been won. On today's mini episode, I speak with Dr. William Lee and Dr. Jason Fung about the seed and soil analogy of cancer and how the seed of cancer may exist in all of us. And here's the big thing, the power to change the soil is in our hands. They also talk about how hyperinsulinemia may enable the development of cancer and how we can build a soil that offers cancer a hostile environment as opposed to a fertile one. Let's listen in, starting with Dr. William Lee, an internationally renowned physician, scientist, and author of the New York Times bestseller, Eat to Beat Disease, the new science of how your body can heal itself. His groundbreaking work has led to the development of over 30 new medical treatments and impacts care for more than 70 diseases, including cancer, diabetes, blindness, heart disease, and obesity. His TED Talk, Can We Eat to Starve Cancer?, has garnered more than 11 million views.
Now, cancers are forming all the time. So right here, right now, my body and yours and everybody watching this podcast, we're forming little microscopic cancers in our body right now. Why? Because we got 40 some trillion cells that are dividing, making more cells all the time. You make one or two mistakes in those cells, bingo, you got a tiny little microscopic cancer like a pimple. And like a pimple, it's harmless because it doesn't have a blood supply. So then your immune system wings by, finds it, and cleans it right out. It's like, or your immune system is like a cop on a beat, okay? And it'll take it right, take the bad guy right out. However, cancers can become dangerous when they are able to hijack our angiogenesis system. So this is really part of the nefarious, dirty deeds of cancer. They can be harmless and sit in the background in our bodies all the time, anytime. But if they find a way to leak proteins called growth factors that act like fertilizer, and they hijack our lawn, that turf that we're trying to grow, and they grow blood vessels into themselves. And I've done research on this. A tumor that doesn't actually have any blood vessels cannot grow any bigger than the head of a ballpoint pen, the little ballpoint thing. That's it. And it can't get any bigger. It doesn't have enough oxygen, no nutrients. So it's stuck. But the moment blood vessels can touch that little tiny microscopic tumor and start to feed it, a cancer that is the size of the tip of a ballpoint pen will grow 16,000 times in 2 weeks. So this is an explosive trigger when angiogenesis is hijacked and our body isn't able to control it. So that's called tumor angiogenesis. And that's how I got started in this field, because we were at the beginning trying to set out to figure out, how do you develop biotech drugs that can starve a cancer by cutting off its blood supply? Well, we've done that. And it's actually one of the mainstays of cancer treatment today. But the more exciting thing, we found that when you use the same testing methods that were used to develop these drugs to test foods, there's more than 100 foods that can actually starve cancers as well.
Let's talk about some of those foods, and let's talk about it in the context of, you used this great analogy earlier in the interview. You said aquarium analogy, that all depending on the nutrients inside of the water, how clean it is, the toxins, the impurities, we know that that could impact the life that would be living inside that aquarium. So what are some of the factors and what are some of the foods that would create the right environment that angiogenesis in this case with cancer would actually be turned off so that it wouldn't fuel those things? So what are some of the examples of those foods, and what are those compounds inside of them that actually change the environment of the aquarium to turn this process off?
Yeah, well, okay. So that's a great analogy. So think about this aquarium that's got fish that you want to keep. These are your pets. And it's also got overgrowth of algae, you know, like that completely overgrows the tank. And that algae is going to kill the fish, right? You get enough gunk growing in that tank, you're going to kill the fish. So what can you actually do to clean up that tank? You want to get rid of the algae, but you don't want to kill the fish. That's really probably the best analogy of this microenvironment situation in any organ that we have in our body, where you want to get rid of the cancer cells, but you don't want to actually kill the healthy cells. Well, it turns out that cancers are exquisitely sensitive to the blood vessels, as I told you. And if you cut off the blood supply to cancer, it's kind of like lowering the bubbling, the air system into the aquarium. So you got enough just for the fish, but not enough for the algae to grow. And the body knows how to make that difference. So for example, blood vessels that are feeding normal cells are really well constructed. Think about a house that the architect really made really strong. It's got good pilings, it's got good infrastructure, the frame is really solid, the windows are really nailed down tightly. And a cancer, when it grows blood vessels to it, doesn't do it really well. So that's like a crappy contractor that cut all the corners. And so basically the house, the blood vessel system feeding the cancer is like a crappy house. When the hurricane comes, okay, guarantee you that the vessels that are feeding the cancer are going to come flying apart, but the ones that are feeding the healthy cells, the well-constructed ones, are going to stick around. They're going to outlast the storm. And that's basically what we can actually do with anti-angiogenic drugs. Now, foods can do the same thing. There are many things in foods, these bioactives we talked about, that, you know, Mother Nature laced into plants, you know, kind of like Mother Nature's pharmacy with an F, actually can help to mow the lawn and get that, tame those blood vessels so that if they're growing towards a cancer, you can kind of prune them back, trim them back to normal, and it prevents the cancers from growing new ones, which is really, really important. For cancer prevention, that's just having enough of that milieu to prevent blood vessels from overgrowing can be really important. So what are some of the things? Green tea, which everybody knows has antioxidants, which can actually lower your blood sugars, help to lower your cholesterol, lower your stress levels, your catecholamine, actually is super packed with these catechins, EGCG, one of the main polyphenol that is anti-angiogenic. So way back when I got in this field, we had a test system where we were testing cancer drugs that could starve a cancer by cutting off its blood supply. And one of the things that I did is I actually dropped some green tea in there, and it was shocking how effective the green tea polyphenols were in stopping those blood vessels that were feeding the cancer. And in fact, if I didn't tell the technician doing the lab work that it was actually a natural compound. And I told them it came from a drug company. They would have like, they would have been super excited about it and started jumping up and down. And so again, you know, Mother Nature is really, really good. So polyphenols in tea, EGCG is one of them. Resveratrol in red wine, also another one that's actually really, really powerful in terms of being anti-androgenic. Genistein, the phytoestrogen in soy, actually can also cut off the blood supply feeding breast cancer. So it's just the opposite of the urban legend out there that soy is not good for you. I recently saw an article. It was a cover of a magazine that said, you know, soy anti-nutrients or something like that. And I, you know, like I, my mind was blown that somebody could actually say that, because most of the nutrients, including the proteins, but also the phytoestrogens in soy, again, you know, if you're a scientist, you take a look at this, and the phytoestrogens look nothing like human estrogens. They're not dangerous. They actually block human estrogens, and they actually are also anti-androgenic, and they cut off the blood supply to breast cancers. And this has been shown in human patients, breast cancer patients as well. Tomatoes have lycopene. So many of the, you know, the same foods that we know are good, healthy, plant-based sources of nutrition, we're now rediscovering that many of the bioactives in them are also powerful cancer blood vessel cutting off systems that cut off the starve a tumor.
My next guest, Dr. Jason Fung, is a physician, author, and researcher. His groundbreaking science-based books about obesity and diabetes, The Diabetes Code and the Obesity Code, and The Complete Guide to Fasting have sold over 1 million copies. His latest book, The Cancer Code, A Revolutionary New Understanding of a Medical Mystery, just recently launched. Dr. Fung talks to us about how to create a terrain in the body where cancer is less likely to grow through specific diet and lifestyle modifications. Let's listen in. If you don't have cancer right now, and this is something that you're paying attention to in the future, what would be your biggest recommendations? You know, somebody who's healthy, who's listening to this podcast right now, and they're like, wow, this is all super fascinating. I've never understood this before, but now I get it. It's almost like you just gave us a masterclass on cancer. What are the one or two things to do today, besides not smoking, that will help us be the most resilient to potentially avoid this disease in the future or greatly minimize our risk?
Yeah. And so you get back to those sort of attributable risk, which is number one is tobacco smoke. So of course, that's probably the single most important thing, and still is to not smoke. And then two is the diet. So avoiding hyperinsulinemia, which is that sort of what I talk about more in the obesity code and the type 2 diabetes, in the diabetes code, is that insulin is this hormone which tends to make us gain weight and also causes insulin resistance. And too much insulin is a very potent growth factor. So that's going to So if you're, you know, you want to avoid things that are going to try, that are going to raise insulin, which is eating a very diet that is very high in refined carbohydrates, for example, sugar is probably something you should best take, you know, in small amounts. And then this other idea is that you really should be having a regular period of fasting every day. That's really sort of basic. It's the word breakfast. It's the meal that breaks your fast, because really you're supposed to be eating at, say, dinner time, which is, say, 6 o'clock, and eating at breakfast time, which is maybe 8 o'clock. So you're getting somewhere between 12 and 14 hours of fasting every single day. That's what's supposed to happen. That's buried in the word breakfast, right? Break fast. That is what's supposed to happen every day. That's not what happens to most of us in 2020, because if you look at sort of societal norms and stuff, instead of having three meals and then no snacks, we sort of graze throughout the day, believing that it's actually healthy for us. I don't think it is, because every time you are eating, you're stimulating your insulin, which is giving growth signals to the cells, including the cancer cells, which love insulin. You know, you look at a breast cancer cell, for example, has like 5 or 6 times the number of insulin receptors compared to a normal breast cell. They love this stuff. They love insulin. They love glucose. So therefore, you want to lower it. So eating sort of whole unprocessed foods is important. That's probably the most important thing. Not eating all the time is the second, probably the second most important thing. And, you know, maintaining a normal weight as best as you can. I mean, that's not always the easiest thing to do, but if you are overweight, then try to lose that weight. If you are type 2 diabetic, try to reverse that type 2 diabetes. And that's the two, you know, the tobacco and the diet are so overwhelmingly more important than everything else. Like you could also, you know, look at the viruses, for example. You can get the, you know, try to avoid the hepatitis B and hepatitis C, which cause cancer and human papillomavirus. But those are sort of givens. But the diet and the tobacco are sort of in a class of their own. Everything else is like 2% and they're at like 30-35%.
And you know, I think I just want to say from somebody from the outside who's been an observer of your work and consuming it and just super appreciative, the cigarette is piece is easy, you know, tough to break, but actually there's really a lot of really interesting stuff that's coming out of Johns Hopkins and other places of using psychedelics to help break cigarette succession. You know, maybe those things will incorporate and we'll figure out new ways to help people. I think it's about 15% of the adult population smokes here in the United States. So it's gone down massively and cancer rates have gone down for that. The diet, sometimes people listening here, if they're not familiar with your work, can think, okay, he's just talking about eating healthy, but really you're talking about getting out of this central paradigm, to use the word, where we're eating sugar in all its other forms. So people who are listening are like, I don't really have a lot of sugar in my diet, you know, maybe a little bit in my coffee, some birthday cake here and there when I'm at parties. But, you know, how often are you eating those meals of refined starches that are a regular part of our daily life? The big bowls of rice or ultra processed foods or breads or other things like that, that fine, you know, have those things every so often as, you know, parts of your diet. But when they become the norm, now you understand why so much of America is in that pre-diabetic state where they think they might be eating healthy because they're just a little bit overweight, but actually their diet is constantly spiking their blood sugar, which leads to all these problems with insulin that you're talking about. So you're not just talking about eating healthy, let's be a little bit more mindful. You're talking about really actually leaning in and getting your blood sugar under control.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, one of the ways, I mean, a lot of people talk about diets and there's all these different opinions on diets, but what people hadn't focused on really at all, I think, until a few years ago was this meal timing. That is eating all the time really the same as eating, you know, a few times? And I think the answer is no, because the point is that you need to let your body sort of digest, let your insulin levels fall so that you don't get all these problems with the insulin resistance and so on, because insulin is not intrinsically bad, but it is a hormone that goes up when you eat. So if you eat constantly, is that a bad thing? And that's not been talked about a lot. And that's what really I've really focused on, is that I think it's actually highly detrimental to be eating constantly. It's just not the way that you're supposed to be doing it. And we've never done it.
Which was a little bit of the trend of some of the advice, especially in like the 90s and 2000s, eat six meals a day, you know, graze throughout the day. And really, you know, we're backing away from that largely through the work that people like yourself are doing and just educating, well, let's actually look, is this actually helpful or could it be harmful? And it's looking like it's not supportive of our overall health goals inside the body. By reshaping our view of cancer as an internal uprising of our own healthy cells, we can begin to take back control. The seed of cancer may exist in all of us, but the power to change the soil is in our hands. Thanks for tuning in to this week's mini episode of the Drew Perrault Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, do me a huge favor, share this episode with someone you know that it might benefit. Who's someone you know that is worried about cancer, has a family history of cancer, and this episode could be an important reminder for them that they're in control of so much more than they may know. Thanks again. I'll see you next week.